Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. And as is the case just about every week, I'm just here for the ride.
Well, yeah, between the two of us, we have been to 20%. We've sat through 20% of the movies.
Really?
Between the two of us. There's five movies, and I've seen two of them, and you've seen zero. So that's out of a total of 10 opportunities.
It's a team effort.
Yeah, but you're zero. You're the zero part of the equation at this point.
Yeah, so?
I'm not worried about another movie. It's just they didn't screen it for us.
Fair enough.
And, well, you know, and part of the other thing is, and I'm just going to complain about this right now, in Columbus, they literally had three movies screening on the same night.
Oh, well, you have that.
At the same time. So.
Well, all right, fair enough. Well, you know, we just, as is always the case, we just press on and review what we can, and we're still going to talk about these other movies. We got, what, five to talk about this week?
For forming opinions.
A few of them seem kind of exciting. The ones that, you know, like Piranha 3D, it's kind of cool.
Sure. Wake up.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can go over to fatguysandmovies.com. You can go to iTunes and download our show via the iTunes store. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, area code 614-388-8735.
Any voicemails this week?
I don't know, dude. Wow. Why would you even ask that question?
Well, because I left one for you when I couldn't reach you.
That seems silly.
Oh, okay. We ready to go forth, sally forth into the movie review world, since we have like five to not talk about?
Yes. So we'll start with Lottery Ticket, which is a group of people who are poor, living in the projects, including Bow Wow.
Who, not Lil Bow Wow.
Just Bow Wow.
About, not like Little Archie.
And they win the lottery. Also, Ice Cube is there.
See, I was just an ordinary guy till I played those numbers.
Hell, don't play the lottery. The machine just broke.
What do you mean it broke?
I'm joking. Now I know your mama beat the black off both of us if she know we ain't played them numbers.
The winning numbers. 42, 33, 4, 32, 45, and 21.
Grandma.
You okay, boy?
We won the lottery. We won! No, nobody can know about this, all right?
We didn't see this movie.
Do
you have an excuse? I have no excuse.
I do have an excuse.
I did not get invited to a screening,
I don't believe.
I did get invited to a screening, but I couldn't make it because there is a conflict, scheduling family conflict.
Gotcha.
It's usually better to not see a movie than to leave three children under 10 just babysat by the dog.
Yeah, gotcha.
Just saying.
No, I understand. I didn't see this movie either. It's directed by a guy named Eric White.
We are so prepared.
Who is famous for directing B2K videos. B2K is an R&B group.
Okay.
That's it. I guess really
and
this is...
Warner Brothers is pimping this thing hard too, because it's like on all their... Blu-ray.
They are, and I would see it for several reasons. There are three essential reasons that I would see this. Brandon T. Jackson, who you know from Tropic Thunder, very funny.
He was also in The Tooth Fairy, so I don't know.
Well,
if
yeah.
He can,
oh, like, just bear with me. Ice Cube is kind of funny. His part in the trailer, I laughed at. And then Terry.
He plays an old dude.
Yeah, and then Terry Crews and Charlie Murphy, because why wouldn't you see something with Terry Crews and Charlie Murphy? As was proven by The Expendables, Terry Crews need not more than about 12 seconds of screen time to be entertaining.
Charlie Murphy was not in The Expendables.
No, Terry Crews was, though.
Yes, you're right. You are accurate.
So these are reasons why I would go see this movie this week. Beyond that, I got nothing. It looks pretty standard. Like, kid lives in projects, kid wins lottery, kid has all kinds of interesting situations created by him winning the lottery, including but not limited to some bully wants to take his ticket. So it's basically just a retelling of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Without the magic.
Without the magic gumballs. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I nothing against the movie. I just couldn't get out. The schedule would not allow me to do it.
I didn't get invited to a screening, so I guess they really just kind of knew that I...
They don't like you.
I would have gone, though. I'll see Lottery Ticket. I don't care. Yeah. Whatever. I like all kinds of movies.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do. Except the ones that are scary. So, moving on. Speaking of things that are really scary.
Yeah.
The next one we were talking about is Nanny McPhee Returns.
Yay!
It's a sequel to a 2005 kids movie that I'm sure you all really wanted, in which Nanny McPhee returns.
I hear you've been naughty. These children need me.
In 2010, get ready for an explosive new adventure.
Nanny McPhee, we need you. It's like magic.
Don't be so disgusting.
But, wow. Did you see the original Nanny McPhee?
I did, and it was, I guess, slightly enjoyable.
It's kind of like a low-rent Mary Poppins.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's Mary Poppins-ish. Mm-hmm. In a way, and Colin Firth. I enjoyed Colin Firth.
Yeah.
Is he not in this one?
No. This one actually takes place. It's a different family and a different time, because the first one was in I think Victorian England, and this one also takes place in England. They don't specifically say, but it's World War II because the father's away at the war. Interesting. A couple things to note about the movie. First of all, it has a great cast. It actually has a large cast.
It has quite a bit of talent. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Emma Thompson as Nanny McPhee, but it has Maggie Gyllenhaal with a British accent as one of the as the mother. It has Maggie Smith from the Harry Potter movies. It has Ewan McGregor has a small part in it. Ralph Fiennes has a part in it. So I kept going, wow, there's a lot of big names in this movie. Also interesting to note, I think this movie's already made $60 million overseas. It's been released in Europe. So it's sort of like Taken, where they're just like, yeah, we'll just drive. And it can make no money, and it's still going to be a profit.
Right.
It's not as good as the first one. It's the typical thing where you got misbehaving kids, and Nanny McPhee comes in and starts teaching them lessons. And she's sort of like Super Nanny, only
magical.
Very different from when Super Nanny tried to take care of Eric Cartman in South Park.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Did not end up in a padded cell. The only problem is it does get it just falls apart in the middle, and it gets really morose and dark because they have the whole thing, you know, is the father's away at war? Is he getting killed? You know, is he okay? Is he surviving? Right. So it gets to be a little bit darker than it really needs to be, and there's this section in the middle that just goes on forever. And one of the other things I don't like, and this is also speaking as a parent, I don't like these movies where it shows kids that are misbehaving from the beginning, because the kids are just downright awful in this movie at the beginning, and you're just like, I have no sympathy for them. As opposed to like Mary Poppins, where the kids just wanted to be with their family, and the father was neglecting them, and they were still good kids from the beginning, but not so much in Nanny McPhee.
I gotcha. So,
I give this movie 5 stars, but that's out of a 17-star scale.
That's funny. Oh, so Kevin Carr. It is always delightful to hear your shenanigans.
Well, thank you. It actually gets a kind of sucks from me.
Oh, fair enough. So Nanny McPhee gets a kind of sucks. Speaking of things that suck, when we come back from break, we're going to talk about vampires and how they suck, Piranha 3D and how they bite, and the Switch and how it switches. And we're back here on Fat Guys at the Movies, and as I mentioned, as we were going to break, we had 3 movies to talk about in the second half of our second segment of the show, the wondiferous second segment.
Wow, you are completely have no focus this week.
No, I do. I'm focused on these 3 movies that we're going to talk about, one of which I missed a screening for. And then 2 of which they didn't screen, but one of which you saw. So we'll start with the one that you actually saw.
Yes.
Which is Vampires Suck, in which Jason Freeberg and Aaron Seltzer return to spoof making to screw with the Twilight franchise.
Ha! From the guys who couldn't sit through another vampire movie, the battle begins.
It's raining, man! Hallelujah, it's raining!
The bigger the hit, the harder. harder, it sucks.
Jacob, why did you just take off your shirt?
My contract says I have to every 10 minutes of screen time.
You know who we are, don't you? You're the Black Eyed Peas.
Jacob, run! Chihuahua?
Now, here was my first question when we talked about this earlier, because you just saw it.
Like, literally just saw it. I, literally
like,
came...
literally.
Right, literally.
Literally came directly from
that's
the
theater. My new catchphrase. It's like Grey's Anatomy. Seriously?
Okay, fair enough. So my first question was it, I guess, on topic? Because the problem I've always found with Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer's stuff is that they're never on topic. In fact, they are so off-topic that our Fat Guy 5 is dedicated to their off-topicness.
Yes, yes. So you'll have to stick around for that. Well, and here's the thing. Of all the movies they did, yes, they are on topic. And that's actually one of the... And I hate to use the word strength for this movie because it gives the wrong impression, necessarily.
It gives the impression that it has strength.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like... And I said this, I actually tweeted this out after I saw it. I go, Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer took five movies to get to the, to raise their quality to the level of, it's okay.
just okay.
That's like the level, quality level that they've reached. And to them, this is a huge, monumentous achievement. To normal filmmaking, it's not. Now, it's better than any of their spoof movies, except Date Movie was okay because it was kind of like that first one they did. But at least they've moved away from just trying to spoof a genre, and they're now just spoofing a movie series. And even with the Twilight, they're not even like saying doing part of. They're not bringing in Vampire Diaries or True Blood. I mean, they have a couple off references to them, but at least again, that's at least in topic. So it's not Vampire Movie, which I guess is a step up.
But see, here's the thing is that I would never have a problem with them doing like a just vampire movie.
Yeah.
As long as they stuck to vampires.
As long as they're not referencing like American Idol.
Yeah, because that was the thing that was frustrating about like Meet the Spartans is that there's plenty within the sword and sandals genre to make fun of that you'll get a little, and if you do it right, you get a little respect from movie fans because you do it out of love. Friedberg and Seltzer don't seem to do anything out of love. They don't seem to love any of the stuff they're making fun of. They're just trying to make as many pop culture references as possible in a 2-hour span.
Yeah, it's not like you're watching this movie and suddenly there was no Avatar jokes, for example. Which to me is a good thing, because if this were like Epic Movie or Disaster Movie, they would have just thrown it because they like, oh, Avatar did well at the box office, let's put a big naked blue person in here. You know what I mean?
Every movie needs a big naked blue person.
It depends on who plays the big naked blue person. But you see what I'm saying? Where I think that this is actually
Romaine Stamos.
Well, I wouldn't mind a slice of that. But anyways,
there you go.
It's an okay movie. It has some funny parts. I have to admit, I did laugh at several points in the movie. Part of it's also because the actors behind it aren't bad. You have Diedrich Bader plays the sheriff, who's the Bella's father in the movie, and he's just a funny dude. You know, they have David Foley's in there, Ken Jeong's in it. Although Ken Jeong's not always funny; it depends on what he's given. And the girl who plays the
Bella
character,
does he play Senior Chang from Community? Because if Senior Chang is in this movie, it's a winner.
he plays the Michael Sheen character from the Volturi, which I don't get where they go from a British guy to they're like, oh, he looks just like him. But because he doesn't.
Well, that might actually be kind of funny because he's Asian. Okay.
Well, what's the best part of the movie is the girl who plays the lead, the Bella character, because she does this. She just nails a Kristen Stewart crappy acting impression because she's there going, and she like twitches. I mean, she's like it. She just nails it. I mean, she does a great impression, and that's actually funny to watch. And the movie is a little bit irreverent in the sense that it really does tear apart what the problems are with the Twilight series. Now, it still has its completely random jokes in it, and it does have moments that fall flat where they don't know exactly what they're doing. I mean, this is not the pinnacle of parody movies. It's the pinnacle of Friedberg and Seltzer movies.
Right.
It's the best they've done. But still, I mean, it's like even Dance Flick was a better movie than this, maybe.
Right.
So it still kind of sucks. But it could be worse.
Sweet. So, kind of sucks. That
kinda
works
sucks.
For me. Moving
but they do,
on.
But they do what's nice about it is they don't just do random, they don't do as many random references. Like, they have a Lady Gaga reference in there, and they just pan across and you see Lady Gaga, and you get the joke or you don't get the joke, and then they move on. Whereas if this were a movie or two ago, they'd pan over to Lady Gaga and then pan back over to whoever it was and go, the person goes, "You mean like Lady Gaga over there?" You know, they'd have to explain the joke.
Right, exactly. Because if you have to explain your joke, it's not funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to the next movie. Mm-hmm. We've got these next two neither one of us have seen, correct?
Correct.
But I have a feeling we're both going to see the next one.
Yes.
In theaters. It's Piranha 3D, in which Alexander Aja, that's right, his name's Aja.
I think it's Aja. It's actually how you pronounce
but
it.
But the J is silent. Directs a 3D bloodbath about killer piranhas eating hot swimmers.
I want to know what the hell this thing is doing in my lake.
Is that a piranha?
This particular piranha vanished 2 million years ago.
I'm thinking about closing the lake.
There's us, and there's 20,000 kids. You do the math.
Piranha hunt in packs. The first bite draws blood. Blood draws the pack.
Now, we were talking about this off the air. We have to give this movie kudos because they're already starting their Oscar campaign.
Which is awesome.
For a movie called Piranha 3D.
That's awesome.
And it's essentially an offshoot of the original Piranha movie, which was a Roger Corman movie, right?
Roger Corman, directed by Joe Dante. And then James Cameron, Oscar winner James Cameron, directed the sequel.
Right,
but this is
Electric Boogaloo.
Yes.
So, this one, it's here's the thing about Piranha 3D. It's got a relatively interesting cast that kind of calls back. Richard Dreyfuss is in this movie, which calls back to another movie about things in the water that eat you, known as
Barracudas.
That too. Then you have people like Ving Rhames. Ving Rhames rips a outboard motor off of a boat and wields it as a weapon.
That's
in this
awesome.
Movie.
In 3D.
I get it. And then you have some other very interesting, like Dina Meyer is in this movie.
Elizabeth Shue's in this movie.
Elizabeth Shue is in it. Christopher Lloyd
That's
is
awesome.
In this movie.
I so can't wait to see this. I'm more excited just talking about
this. Jerry O'Connell is in this movie.
Oh my God. Rebecca Romijn. There's her.
Mm-hmm.
She's usually chewing on him.
Yeah, so there's that, and then porn star Riley Steele. So,
oh, okay. You know what though? It's also Alexander Aja. He's a great director, and he did High Tension. He did The Hills Have Eyes. Even Mirrors, which wasn't great, was still I found entertaining.
Right. P2. I actually enjoyed a little bit of P2.
I can't. Did he direct P2?
He wrote it.
I don't think he directed it.
He produced it and wrote
okay.
it.
Well, okay. But no, I do. I am looking forward to this. So this one I'm excited about. And it's in 3D, and it'll be just a gimmicky 3D movie, which will be fun.
Yeah, it'll be way over the top and awesome. So there's that. And then finally, we'll talk about The Switch, in which Jason Bateman and Jennifer Aniston try to recreate the brilliant magic of J-Lo's The Backup Plan with this middle-aged baby comedy.
I would like you to be the first to know I'm having a baby.
You're pregnant?
Not yet, but I'm working on it.
A party for insemination?
Only Cassie would do it like this.
I'm Roland,
the donor.
Well, I'm Cassie's best friend.
Oh, that's okay.
What's wrong with my sperm, by the way?
You're a little neurotic.
You had your window with Cassie, and you doomed it. She put you in the friend zone.
So who does this?
Will you relax? This is how everybody's doing it these days.
Shouldn't that be cleaned or something?
I didn't see this because I saw Annie McPhee instead.
I didn't see this because I just skipped it. I was apartment shopping, so...
This guy, I don't know much about it. I've heard it's somewhat sitcomy.
Well,
I've heard other people
who liked it. Jason Bateman and Jennifer Aniston. So there's that.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman's funny, but he's
Jennifer Aniston's not.
Right.
And I second that yawn.
God, I'm already bored by this movie.
So am I. Let's just go on.
When we come back, we're gonna make fun of some stuff.
Miles of hard road.
33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. After gushing over what Piranha 3D could be, crossing our fingers for that.
I'm really, you know, I have a lot of hope for Piranha 3D, because that's, I mean, it just feels like that's a blast, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I like movies that are a blast.
You do. You do. Speaking of movies that are a blast, let's talk about the box office. Do you like that? I picked up your segue and moved.
Yay!
Hooray, the Expendables won the weekend, which kind of surprised me. I was actually thinking Eat, Pray, Love was going to win simply because...
Yeah, I think we were kind of both in agreement that Expendables would have been defeated by estrogen, and that Scott Pilgrim would also be defeated by estrogen.
Scott Pilgrim
was defeated by everything.
Scott Pilgrim did exactly what I was predicting it would do, and I made that prediction like a month ago.
You know, it's tough, and I know there's a lot of people disappointed out there that Scott Pilgrim finished, what, fifth and made like mm-hmm. $10 million. But,
10.5.
10.5.
10.6 for its weekend.
You know, it's just one of those things that it's not a widely marketable movie.
Yeah.
This is what
did bother me about it. It's watching the bloggers and the fans of Scott Pilgrim have their absolute fit over this weekend was just somewhat sad for me.
Right.
And I'm not saying people are sad or anything like that, but it's like so many people had so much emotion invested in it and that they brought their expectations higher than it was ever going to be. And they pinned so much on hope. And it reminded me a little bit of, you know, if you ever played, you know what it reminded me? It reminded me of, like, I'm going to use a political analogy, but I'm not going to get political. Most election years, you know who's going to win the presidency. The polls are swinging one way or the other, depending on who's going to. And it's like watching the losing side. Like the day before, they still like keep on hoping, and the returns are coming in, and all the states are going to the other guy, and they're like, "We can still pull it out." And I'm just like, "Yeah, no, it's not happening." I mean, because I even saw that when the Friday numbers came out, people are like, "Oh, well, it may be a little rally for the week," and I'm like, "No, it won't," because everybody who went to see it saw it the first day. It was a very front-loaded movie, even for its little microcosm. There's no blip up, and. Mm-hmm. Even though the fans are going to see it 3, 4, 5 times, I know people who've seen it multiple times, and not to take away your enjoyment of the movie, but Scott Pilgrim's wasn't going to win. And then when the numbers came in, people were like making excuses for it. And even Cole Tobias wrote something about this on Film School Rejects, and I read it, and I'm like, you know, I'm glad you got faith here, but it's not going to follow the trend of Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead because it opened in like 3,000 theaters.
Well, and yeah, and really, you know, if you went and saw Scott Pilgrim last week and you enjoyed it, that's what matters.
Good for you. You had a movie you love. That's awesome.
That's what matters. I guess the only thing that is a little sad is that studios won't be taking a risk on small print. Because I think the thing about Scott Pilgrim, I guess the only real disappointing thing to me, I mean, I knew going into it that it was not going to make money. In fact... Yeah. I sat down with a few friends to see it on Friday night, and they were like, "Why isn't the theater packed?" And I'm like, "Well, this movie's just—it's not gonna do crazy business. Like, it's not gonna be packed. Maybe here in Austin, you'll get a couple screenings that are sold out. But the thing about Scott Pilgrim is that it's a smaller independent comic. So, and it's, you know, for the first time in a long time, it's not one of the big major comic book publishers who are putting out this movie or putting out a movie. You know, it's not a Marvel or a DC or a Vertigo comic. It's a small independent. So it's similar to the way you root for independent film, where it'd be really great to see some of the better independent comics become movies. But with the, I guess, essential failure of Scott Pilgrim, you may not see that as much in the future. You know, Scott Pilgrim was kind of this charge for these like wonderful indie comics that everybody loves.
Not everybody loves.
Well,
that's the whole.
That it has its
fan base.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. I think people are translating to say, "Oh, it's this really cool movie with heart, and it's a really cool comic with heart." And I'm like, "There's a reason they published 6 volumes of this, and it never went." There's a reason DC or Marvel didn't swoop in and snatch it up and try and buy it out.
Well, because it was already being independently published.
Well, no, but I mean, there was no like stampede to try and do it. There was no stampede to go after this comic because it's a niche comic. I know comic fans who don't give a crap about Scott Pilgrim. That's the point. And there's nothing wrong with being a fan of it.
Right.
It has its fans. True. That's great.
It did give a little bit of hope to the smaller, like the indie comic houses, like the people that actually go to Comic-Con and set up booths and sell comics and, you know, and are legit comic people.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like somebody who writes for Marvel.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's like when people, it's like when you have a TV show that airs on like ABC, CBS, or NBC, or even Fox, one of the four big networks, and it gets like 5-6 million people watching it, and they cancel it, and you're like, why? It had its fans, and you're just like,
it's not
enough to go to the mass. Not when you've got 20 million people watching the frickin' Bachelor.
Right.
You know, and not just The Bachelor. I mean, there's still good stuff. Like, Lost was drugging a lot of people watching it, even in its waning years. It still had big numbers. But, like a TV show like Battlestar Galactica, which started out on NBC and they quickly moved to the Sci-Fi Channel, was a smart move because it would have never survived on network because it just didn't command as large of an audience. That doesn't mean it's a crappy show. It's a great show.
Right.
It's the same thing with Scott Pilgrim. That doesn't mean it's a bad comic. It's just, it's not for everybody. Right. And
like I said, the only disappointing part is the way that it will affect decision making in the future.
Yeah. You know? Well, but see, this is where I think it was a foolish move. Because I heard people say, it had 60. It wasn't that big of a budget, and then it was like I've seen number 60 million.
It had a pretty big budget.
60 million's a big budget, and here's the difference. Scott Pilgrim is going to probably end up making about twice what MacGruber made, and Universal's going to take a huge loss on Scott Pilgrim. They're going to break even with MacGruber because MacGruber cost $10 million to make.
Right.
And that's how these things roll. If they would have been able to do Scott Pilgrim for $10 million, it would be a hit. Same thing, look at like Kick-Ass. Mm-hmm. Kick-Ass worldwide has made less than $100 million, but it only costs like 20-some million.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a relatively cheap one, so it's going to, you know, appear in the black. And Scott Pilgrim, it would have to make $100 million just to even think about breaking even.
Right.
And it's not.
Yeah, at this point, Universal's just pouring money into Scott Pilgrim, and it's a sinking ship.
Well, because the only other thing they got, now they got Nanny McPhee Returns.
that might make it back up. That movie probably cost, about $5?
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, it already made $60 million worldwide.
Yeah.
It hasn't even opened in the States.
So, I don't feel bad for Universal, but I do hope that this doesn't completely take studios away from taking indie comics and making them into movies, because there are some good ones out there.
I don't think that they will. I just think that the idea of pouring $60 million into
I don't think another
one's
gonna
dumb.
Get that much money. But
yeah.
Anywho,
give me $10 million and an indie comic label and I'll make money for you, damn it.
I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, for $10 million.
Give me $10 million and I'll find an indie comic and I can make a movie for $10 million. And it would do better in release it with the campaign for Scott Pilgrim, and we'll make money.
Yeah. All right. So
there'd
let's
be tits
focus
in it too. That's all there is
week.
To it. Did I just say that?
What?
I said there'll be tits in it too.
Oh well, yeah.
That would be mine. Not my tits.
That said, I enjoyed Scott Pilgrim the second time I saw it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it was okay.
All right. So this week we've got 5 movies opening.
Yes.
One of them is a Friedberg Seltzer movie, and those seem to always do moderate box office, despite
with the exception of Disaster Movie,
which was actually a disaster.
It was awful.
But we got Lottery Ticket, which I think will do well. Nanny McPhee Returns, which I really question whether or not anybody was really yearning for the sequel to Nanny McPhee in the first place. Piranha 3D, I have a feeling, will open. It'll have strong midnights, but I don't know if it's going to have a huge weekend. Maybe a $20 million weekend.
I have a feeling that the weekend is going to be a horse race between Vampire Suck and Piranha 3D.
Really? I think Lottery Ticket is going to be up there, too.
I don't know. Maybe. It could
be. But I also think The Expendables should be pretty strong second week.
Yeah, but even if it drops only 40%, you're still looking at less than 20 million.
Right.
But I don't think anyone's going to be breaking more than 20 or 25 million at all. The only reason, now if Vampire Suck opened on Friday, I think it would totally win the weekend hands down. For no other reason than it opened on a Wednesday. So I think it's going to be a little bit front loaded. But part of the thing is, there are just people I know who want to see it because it's about Twilight. And that just...
That's true.
It's just, that's stupid, but...
But it's true. There. It exists.
My sister is a huge, ridiculously obsessive Twilight fan. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I kind of want to see that. That actually looks kind of funny. I'm like, no, it looks like crap. And she's like, no, it kind of looks funny.
Well, no, it exposes how shitty the movies that you watch are.
Yeah, but the thing is, she's literally going to go see it. She's never seen a
Freaky Friday. She's literally going to go see it.
Literally. Fair enough.
She may literally be seeing it right now.
I'm going to literally punch you in the face.
This is why I enjoy our little chats.
Is that what this is?
Yeah. So, all right. So,
what do you think is going to win? Do you think that lottery ticket is going to win?
I think lottery ticket is going to win, although it'd be really...
You're doing the roulette thing? You're going to bet on black?
I'm not answering that question.
I just said that. Well, no, I mean, it's...
No, well, I think it's, you know, it's you know, lottery ticket's made for a certain audience, and that audience hasn't had a film that's kind of geared towards them in a while. I think Death at a Funeral is the last one.
Death at the Funeral didn't do as well as I thought, though. Which
so
is funny.
I think there's a lot of star power in lottery ticket.
Bow Wow?
Yeah, Bow Wow has a following. He's literally very young. Bow Wow? It's a youth market. But
you know, I interviewed Bow Wow once?
I don't.
When he was like 16.
Dude, that makes sense.
Why?
Just because.
I wrote for a paper, and he was coming to town.
Interview Bow Wow.
I interviewed him when he was little Bow Wow, but he was getting ready to get rid of. He was sort of like, you didn't call him like adolescent Bow Wow because that just sounded stupid.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, no, I think the little Bow Wow movie is gonna do pretty well. Time now for the Fat Guy Five. We're gonna do that.
Woo, sure.
Does that sound good? All right, so the Fat Guy 5 this week is pretty simple, but also very fun. The 5 most out-of-place pop culture references in one of the Friedberg and Seltzer spoof movies. And that's, you know, we talked about in Vampire Suck, one of the things that they maybe didn't do as much in this one as they do in their other movies is they throw in these random pop culture references that don't really make sense. They may think it's like madcap and silly humor, but it's not funny at all because A, they have nothing to do with the movie, and B, they usually have to explain the joke within the film, and when you have to explain the joke, it's not funny. So,
well, and it's also like an epic movie. I remember they made a joke about, not to, it was a disaster movie, they made a joke about High School Musical,
yeah,
which isn't a disaster movie. It has no, it's just it happened to be in the pop culture zeitgeist.
Right, it happened to have come out.
Yeah. Whereas, like, in like there's other, like, they have a Gossip Girl reference in Vampire Suck, but at least it's all within that teen angst sort of realm. So it's, you know.
Fair enough.
Not like these. You start with the first one.
We'll start with the first one, which is my most despised Friedberg Seltzer movie, which is Meet the Spartans and bald Britney Spears and her her baby who get kicked down the pit of despair. As much as I enjoyed seeing a Britney Spears get kicked down into the pit of despair... that had no place in Meet the Spartans.
Yeah.
So.
It was better. It was, that was worse than the Juno. That was my baby's foot. In a disaster movie.
Yeah.
Which again, Juno is not a disaster movie. Juno,
right, not a disaster movie.
There you go. All right. Okay. Do you want to do the next one? That was.
Yeah,
one
the next one is Snaggletooth Amy Winehouse from Disaster Movie, in which she essentially plays the tiger or the. What are those called? Sabertooth tigers?
Sabertooth cat.
She plays the saber. She's Sabertooth Amy Winehouse. Mm-hmm. Again, 10,000 BC. Yes, that's a disaster movie, kind of. But it's kind of an epic, you know, movie like that. Amy Winehouse has no business being in there.
Well, she is a disaster, and her career is a disaster.
So I guess you could tie it that way.
I would imagine her endocrine system right now is a disaster as well.
There's a lot of
that's the closest.
There's a lot of disastrous things about Amy Winehouse, yes. But none of them have anything to do with Sabertooth Tigers in 10,000 BC.
Yeah, the next one would be in again Meet the Spartans. That gets on there twice. It's that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the best example of something that I could say where they would explain the joke. There's a scene in there where they're in Sparta, in the sand, and they look over, and there's a guy on a motorcycle in a leather jacket with a flaming skull head and a chain whip. Mm-hmm. And then somebody look, they pull back to the main character, and he goes, "Ghost Rider?" And my question is, who is going to confuse that pop culture reference with anything else? Because how many other but somebody going to be like, "Oh, I thought that was Santa Claus."
Well, and that's the thing is, like,
Princess Diana.
It's almost funny if they don't say anything.
Yeah.
It's almost funny if Ghost Rider is just there.
And then they have to explain it. But yeah, right. That's the thing. They explain. They did it with the same thing in Meet the Spartans with Ugly Betty as the Oracle. She comes up, she got the glasses, and she's this ugly Latino chubby. And they're like, "Ugly Betty?" I'm like, wow, you have to explain that?
Yeah, if you have to explain your joke, it's not funny.
So Ghost Rider.
Things we learned from Monty Python.
Yeah.
Just don't explain the joke. It's mm-hmm. Just let it be funny. The next one is not just from Date Movie, but from all. I think in just about every one of their movies, Michael Jackson shows up. So does he show up in Vampire
no.
Suck?
No. No, he doesn't. He's dead, though.
You would think they'd have Vampire. You would think that that would be the movie where it would fit. It'd be like Vampire Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah, that could work.
But no, of course not. And he would show up during the Babies War.
They get also it. Really miss a huge. They had actually set themselves up for a Carrie reference because it was at the prom. They didn't go for it, which basically means that they're such idiots they don't even know of the movie Carrie because I guess it's too old for them.
Yeah, exactly. And see, that's the frustrating part is like there are plenty of things that you can make fun of within these genre. And then the last one. You want me to do the last one?
Yes, you can do the last one.
The last one is the Fawn version of P. Diddy from Epic Movie.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense.
No, doesn't. I don't get why
P. Mr. Diddy Tumnus... of Narnia.
Yeah, no. Okay. I'm depressed now talking about this.
God, I thought this was going to be more fun than it turned out to be.
I want to drink Drano now.
Well, don't drink Drano. We have to do one more segment.
I'll do it afterwards.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to wrap you up, and then Kevin's going to drink some Drano.
Yay.
And we're wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Hopefully we haven't put you to sleep yet.
You're doing a good job on yourself, apparently.
I know, right? I'm like in between segments, I'm like...
In between segments? During segments? You've during yawned segments. Like four times in this episode.
Well, it's when you start talking about movies, I just start to doze off.
Well, because you haven't seen any of them. You going on by like trailers.
Well, we do have some interesting stuff to talk about in the next segment. Yes. Or this segment. We are doing the world famous DVD roundup.
Boing!
I'm testing
different sounds.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
So we'll wait to hear what Jeff Hall thinks of that.
He was very excited that both of us mentioned his name. And I'm not going to mention his name just to spite him.
He's like, we were talking he's like our him. Only listener, so that's cool. So we got, I've got a couple picks, and one of which you should run out and get and watch. Well, all three of which are good. But the Red Riding Trilogy came out on Blu-ray. Those are some nice flicks if you like things that kill things.
But it's also, isn't it like 6 hours long or something? So you do want to have some
movies.
Time.
Yeah, it's three separate movies. Okay. That's why it's a trilogy. That's the whole...
Yeah, I get that. Okay.
Also, Dexter Season 4 came out on DVD and Blu-ray. I'm a big fan of Dexter, and I thought Season 4 was probably the best one since the first season.
Yeah.
So, highly recommend Dexter Season 4. And then my pick of the week on Blu-ray is The Good, the Bad, and the Weird. This movie's been around for like 10 years, it feels like, on various festival circuits, and I finally saw it, and it is one of the best movies I've seen all year.
It looks beautiful.
Just this insane Korean Western. There are subtitles, but you'll get over it. And there are several action sequences in this movie that are some of the most elaborate and interesting stuff that I've seen on screen in a long time. So I would highly recommend The Good, Bad, and the Weird.
Ah, okay.
At least rent it, just so that you can broaden your horizons. Because I know a lot of people don't like international films with subtitles and things like that, and they stay away from seeing anything that doesn't have Jennifer Aniston in it. But The Good, the Bad, and the Weird is a legitimate great movie.
Wow. Somehow Jennifer Aniston became the benchmark of non-foreign films.
Well, just the benchmark of blandiose films.
Blandiose, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, all
right.
All right, cool. So what are your picks this week?
We got a whole bunch, actually. One I've been pimping around a lot talking to, I was on the Golden Briefcase this week. I was talking about this. I also talked about it on the Idiot Boxers earlier this week. Cougar Town, season one. Which, you know, a lot of people like Cougar Town, really? And I'm like, no, this is actually a good show. It's produced and created by Bill Lawrence, who did Scrubs. And the original premise was...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the original premise was it was this woman in her 40s, or she's 40, the character's 40. Courtney Cox is 46, but the character's 40, and it's played by Courtney Cox, and she's recently divorced, and she's, you know, on the prowl and going after younger men. And that's why it got the name Cougar Town. But it's sort of... evolved into just sort of this cul-de-sac with these neighbors, and it's kind of like Friends in their 40s, with sort of that Seinfeld-esque bent where they are, none of them are like redeeming characters. They're all like damaged.
That's
in a
kind
lot
of
ways.
Interesting.
It's a great show. It really, really is funny. You kind of have to get through the first three or four episodes to really kind of, you know, get for it to hit a stride. But, you know, by the end, like I said, if you like Scrubs and you like that sort of humor, that's what it is. It's a really fantastic show, and I recommend it.
Okay.
So,
fair enough. I'll watch it. Bill Lawrence is awesome.
There's also the last song with Miley Cyrus.
Oh my God, it's Miley.
Miley, which actually is not bad. I mean, for sort of like that next step up from the tween.
It's
crowd.
A Nicholas Sparks movie.
Yeah, it's Nicholas Sparks. Somebody dies in it.
Be real.
I won't tell you who. Also, I want to throw out another one. This was an older reference, but an older one, but. We didn't talk about it because actually we didn't have a show that week. The Elvis Blu-ray collection. Did you get that?
Yeah, that's a pretty rad set.
Yeah, Jailhouse
Elvis
Rock.
Elvis never looked so good. Well, in the two of the three movies. The last one, he's kind of fat. But.
No, he's not fat yet. He's going to be fat. But it's like, because that was in 72.
There.
He didn't get really fat until like the mid-70s.
Right.
But yeah, it has Jailhouse Rock, Viva Las Vegas, and Elvis on tour. Then Nanny McPhee, if you want to go see Nanny McPhee Returns, you can go get Nanny McPhee on Blu-ray, first time release on Blu-ray.
That's right.
You
Nanny
got
McPhee.
The Hamlet Blu-ray book, not with Mel Gibson screaming racial epithets and running drunk into things. This is the one with Kenneth Branagh.
Wait, there's one with Mel Gibson screaming racial.
Well, there's one with Mel Gibson,
things.
And he's done that. He's done the screaming racial things before.
Oh.
But no, this is a four-hour Hamlet with Kenneth Branagh directing.
Yeah, the Kenneth Branagh version. It's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. There's also Ugly Betty Season 4 and One Tree Hill Season 7, if you like sort of TV.
If you like TV. And our stinker this week is the movie that earned the first F of the year from Film School Rejects, Furry Vengeance.
F for Furry Vengeance. That is a
F
bad
for Furry Vengeance.
Movie.
It's
it
been so far.
Awful.
It's Furry Vengeance and The Last Airbender are the two Fs that we've. I've given them both. By the way,
yeah, it's bad. It is a bad movie. Do
abysmal.
Not watch this unless you're like
it's
five.
Really painful to watch. All right, cool. So let's wrap up the reviews. We've got Lottery Ticket, which neither one of us saw, but you know, seems like it might actually be a little funny based on its cast. Nanny McPhee Returns, which you saw,
kind of sucks.
The Switch, neither one of us saw, but it's got Jennifer Aniston in it, so if you're boring, you'll be, like, into that one. Piranha 3D, which I think we're both going to see at midnight on Thursday night. That'll be a blast. And then Vampires Suck, which you trekked over to very early in the morning to see.
Yeah.
And
it's okay. It still kind of sucks.
Still kind of sucks. Next week, we're reviewing Avatar, the Big Blue Sex Scene Edition, The Last Exorcism, and Takers, which early buzz from Last Exorcism says that it's fantastic. So we'll see. In the meantime, head over to fatguysandmovies.com and check out all of our good stuff, and we'll be back next week.
Word.